So, David, this new festival is coming up. This is
round three.
Round three, the third year of Opera Philadelphia's
O Festival.
O Festival. Yeah. So where did this all come from?
We believe that opera is the original multimedia experience, and we also believe that it could be a viable part of contemporary life. Because if we told contemporary stories along with the classics. And so we've created a festival that kind of Netflix is the opera going experience by allowing people to binge watch lots of different experiences. And so it really came from the simple idea of how can we have exciting artistic activity conform to people's media buying and media consumption habits.
So you're enabling people to become completely immersed in the art form. And the festival, I notice, has four different kinds of operas.
Yeah. So the idea is that in this day and age, you know, people get to curate and pick their own things. So, you know, what our idea is let's provide as wide as possible artistic experiences. So Love for Three Oranges, which is in the Academy of Music, one of the great pieces of the 20th century, Semele, early music, by Handel, world premiere of Denise and Katya, and then a performance artist who's classically trained in Let Me Die. And what we found is people find their own handholds, their own on-ramps, and they pick what they want to pick, and then that usually leads for them seeing something more because every time it exceeds their expectations.
Well, I noticed in the promotional materials, you talk about a new kind of comedy, but Love for Three Oranges was composed in 1919.
Right. But first of all, it's the way our production works is we bring the 21st century director and design lens to it. It's still set in the time of its writing, but it's made by our hands today. And the piece is rarely performed. You know, we recognize maybe the march from it, some of the music, but it's going to be a fresh new comedy for everyone in the theater because out of 2,700 people, probably five will have seen it before.
Oh, well, that's interesting. And then the same thing with a new kind of myth for Semele.
Right. So again, Semele, it's the first time we've produced a Handel opera. It's by a really amazing contemporary design and directing team led by James Darrow, who did our Breaking the Waves. And so it has a completely stylized realization to mythology. And again, early music in many ways feels very contemporary to me and to others.
And the third opera is actually a new work, a new kind of tragedy.
It is a new kind of tragedy based on some life experiences that we may recognize from history, but it's about a young teenage couple. It's called Denise and Katya, Dennis and Katya. They're two 15-year-olds who run from their families to be in love. Sound familiar? Well, unfortunately, the story continues in the familiarity of Romeo and Juliet, and they do choose to end their lives because the family and Russian special forces are closing in on them. But that's only the first half of the opera because they document everything leading up to their death on social media. And this opera is about what happens to our stories when heartless algorithms pump stories out into the internet. And this young couple who made bad life choices were used for clickbait, and other people started telling their stories, not in a responsible way, all guided by algorithms of social media. And that's what our opera is about.
So that is actually very contemporary, and it's about not only the events that happened, but the way we take those events and observe them and disseminate the information about them.
And that's for anybody. It could be you through your children or your grandchildren or people that we know that their lives are being informed and in some ways hijacked by the amount of public scrutiny and change. So this opera asks as many questions as it solves. We're super thrilled. It just won the Fedora Generali Prize, which is by the Fedora platform in Paris. We're the first U.S. company to ever win this prize, and it awards new operas that have yet to be produced an award of money and recognition because they have the most potential to add to the canon of work. And this, our opera, our world premiere was selected for it in June.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
It's really interesting because the three different stories you describe are compelling, engaging storytelling. Do you think there are misconceptions about what opera is?
Yeah, I think, first of all, many times there's not even a conception of what it is. I'd be happy for a misconception if people actually had a thought of what it is. Yeah, I mean, I think most people don't think it's going to be as compelling as it is. And, you know, let's not forget, this is opera. So I've told you about the storylines, but music is what is going to have the greatest effect on us. And we do that in all of our lives, at our greatest moments of joy and sorrow. We sing. We sing at funerals. We sing at weddings. Music has an ability to us to find joy, and we don't fear things when we're fully in music. It sounds like a good time of in the world to not fear some things. And so opera is special because it's virtuosic, that these singers take this little muscle in their throat and they do these Olympic athlete of of singing. And why I think opera is so contemporary is because everything in our lives, we're looking for those virtuosic performances. We're looking for the virtuosic painting. We're looking for that virtuosic TV series with unbelievable writing that's like unbelievable. So opera is so virtuosic in its ability to tell stories through an emotional space that we can't access every day because we don't walk around singing. Makes it feel special. And that's what people don't understand until they actually walk into a place where this is happening.
And perhaps if people do have misconceptions about opera, it could possibly be based on opera from decades ago where there might be more perceived artifice, or just because of the style and the way things were done decades ago is different from the way it's done today.
Yeah, I mean, to take another example from another production in our season later after the festival, Madame a Butterfly. What do you do in the 21st century? You know, do you continue to produce this opera in yellowface? What do you do about exotic orientalism that Puccini did in his day that we know is false and doesn't bear any relationship? So what we've chosen to do is we spent 5 years casting in every Asian principal singer that's cast is Asian in the book is actually of Asian descent. And in our production, Pinkerton arrives with all his American possessions, and she learns to sit on his sofa because she's the one that's being changed. It's him. There's a colonialism to it that we understand in this time. It's the music's still beautiful. The story's still heart-wrenching, but we have a responsibility for being authors in the 21st century to tell the story and let the music speak to our minds today. The festival does that even in higher regard, right. Because we're controlling a lot of what the actual stories are because there's two new works.
When did you first become involved in opera?
I became involved in opera in 1989. And the reason I became involved in opera is I was hired by the Canadian Opera Company. So I went to business school and I was hired as some analytical marketing person by the Canadian Opera Company. And I'd never seen an opera. And I fell in love. And within 6 months, I was running the marketing program at the Canadian Opera Company. And then I went to my then boss, the general director, Brian Dickey, and told him I fell in love with the art form. And for 4 years, I was seconded to all of the artistic departments. And that's where I sort of got my training, thanks to Brian, in my hometown, Toronto.
Oh, wow. So you've seen an evolution of the art form, even in the time that you've been involved.
Yes, very much so. You know, there's been a renaissance of embracing the composer. Composers have gotten out of that academic stranglehold that was in place in the 1950s, and I've started to create new works of meaning. We've developed 10 new operas at Opera Philadelphia, and they have collectively received 62 independent production runs across 8 countries. For over 260 performances. And so that tells us a whole bunch of things. It means we're getting pretty good at developing new work here, but that there's an appetite for it around the world. And that's happening at the same time is that people are holding on to the traditions of opera and using our 21st century theatrical talents and technology to breathe contemporary life into the traditional pieces, which we continue to do here. Love for Three Oranges is a great example of it.
Well, you've had amazing success, and really Opera Philadelphia's profile has just risen and risen and risen. Do you attribute that to anything in particular, any particular philosophy?
Yeah, so I think what's caught on is that at Opera Philadelphia, we've wanted to be the responsible authors of the future of the form. That has been our guiding principle. And so when you look at how we've made this festival, you look at how we did Midsummer Night's Dream this last February, our range of repertoire, our commissioning program, our residency program, what we do in the schools, it's all governed by that principle of authorship of the future of opera. And that has gotten us a lot of notice because we're unwavering in that. And so I think we've really carved out a very strong and important niche as being, you know, one of the international center of excellence for innovation in opera.
And does part of that involve kind of reading your audience and reaching out into the community?
Yeah, completely. I mean, you know, I think if you're going to be the authors of the future of opera, you need to democratize it. And that means you need to write, produce, and reach for everybody in the community. And I think we've done a really earnest job of that. Everything from commissioning We Shall Not Be Moved with a number of other commissions of similarity that I'll be seeing in the next couple of years, our residency program for artists that have not had voices before. And so I think that's really fueled that. And we've also had an unwavering commitment to excellence. So we don't do things just because it's new. It has to be of the highest quality, and our production team is working at an international standard, and we have partnerships all over Europe. Our Lucia last year was co-produced with Vienna Staatsopera. The Denise and Katja will be going to France and UK right after here because that's where the partners are. So we've also been unwavering in excellence because we know that people today have a much deeper and wider aesthetic understanding of the world than they did 50 years ago. And what they accept has to be done at a higher level. And so we've tried to bake that into everything that we do.
So is this festival format, it's different from the traditional way an opera season was planned. And so this is, it is changing your focus over the course of a season.
It has completely. I mean, what we wanted to do was we wanted the festival, as I said earlier, was sort of our opportunity to create a binging situation, sort of the opposite of subscription, right? So you don't have to plan for it. You just know that in 3 days, you can go have a bunch of crazy, great, wild, beautiful experiences, you know, or you can spread it out over 10 days, but it's just, it's this moment in time. And that also that we can put juxtaposition in styles, which is very important. People really want to be stimulated and they don't want things the same all the time. And so the festival allows us to do that. The other thing it does is it allows us to be loud and proud about the opening of the cultural season. So the fact that we have 32 performances, I think, I keep losing track, in 12 days this year, that puts a marker that culture matters and we're going to celebrate it. And we're going to celebrate it, not just us, that doesn't count. We're going to celebrate it all together.
Well, it's interesting also, we didn't mention the fourth opera, the new kind of satire that you're doing.
So Let Me Die. It's opera. We have to talk about dying. We're doing that with the Fringe Arts, who've been a partner with our festival. Our festivals actually touch up against each other every year. And it's from the mind of Joseph Koechler, who is a performance artist who's classically trained. And he has an inquiry. His inquiry is, in real life, death is very horrible. It's truly horrible. So why in opera do we sit and wait for 2 hours for it to happen and think it's beautiful? So he is going to explore a range of deaths from the standard opera canon and juxtapose and put those together for us to see or try and understand what is beautiful about this, about death and opera. I have my own theories. I happen to be married to a chaplain who sees death all the time and expresses it as the sorrow in death is a unique expression of the love contained within the person that is grieving. And what opera can do is put us into that place and let us share that love musically. But we'll see what Joe says.
Will there be humor as well?
Yes. I was going to say, I don't think it's going to be... It has humor. It has camp. And like any good camp, it has really poignant, insightful moments.
Because I think when we were talking earlier about old operas from decades ago, the concept that someone would die for many, many, many minutes and be singing full voice the whole time...
Yes.
Struck some people as funny.
Yeah, it can be. I mean, if it's not handled really well, it can be borderline hysterical.
Okay, so you have these four operas, and you're introducing the whole festival with Opera on the Mall.
That's what I was going to get to. Yeah, so last year we did this amazing production of La Boheme, and it features the artwork from the Barnes Foundation, the Philadelphia Museum of Art, all the Impressionist and Post-Impressionist paintings. And what we did is we taped that on HD, and we will broadcast it free for the community as the kickoff pre-festival excitement warm-up on September 14th on Independence Mall. We do it with multiple huge HD screens you can see from outer space. I'm joking, but you probably could. They're really, you can see them really well. And then also we do a top-of-the-line surround sound. It's the most beautiful experience. It's free for the community. Bring your blankets, your picnic baskets, your lawn chairs. It's literally one of the most feel-good evenings in Philadelphia, right in front of the Liberty Bell.
That's excellent. How long have you been doing that?
This is our seventh year. And this year, for the first time, we decided to kick off the festival as a almost prelude to the festival by placing it this little bit earlier so that more people could go.
That's great. Well, we did a live broadcast from WRTI Studios last spring when you were doing this, and they were amazing and wonderful, and it is beautiful, and we look forward to that.
Yeah, I can't wait. It's like literally one of my happiest days every year.
When I talk to you, David, it's impossible not to get kind of excited about this. So,
well, if I'm not excited about what we do, who can be?
So going forward, what are you most excited about in the art form today?
What I'm most excited about, we've started a real practice here of inviting artists in from outside opera that have not traditionally had a voice, who are wildly talented. And what I'm most interested to see is what happens when you bring opera artists and non-opera artists to create something that has a freshness and a vitality that it's all its own. And I think there's more sort of porous membranes in our art form opening up to that. And certainly the biggest starting point for that is to engage artists of color who have been largely kept out of the classical world of composition. And so we have been working with artists of color, with classical opera artists in an exploration to see what American opera could actually sound like now by involving America in that dialogue. That's what I'm most excited about.
We're having a live broadcast at WRTI with the singers from The Love for Three Oranges. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Oh, I'm so excited about this. So our music director, Corrado Rivaras, Maestro Rivaras, this was his idea. And he thought that this piece was the perfect festival piece because it's a comedy and it's insightful. It's fantastical. It's otherworldly. And it has a cast, really big cast, which allows us to really celebrate all the great music places of Philadelphia with Academy of Vocal Arts, Curtis Institute. We have a lot of graduates there. We have some people from the opera world coming who haven't been on our stage. And so it's like a colony of artists with a big chorus doing this fantastical journey that involves three oranges. And if you pay attention, you might see some oranges taking over our city as a lead up to this, to get everyone rolling into the theater.
Little teasers.
Yes.
Right. So it's about a prince who has a spell cast on him, causing him to be obsessive about three oranges.
He does. And you know, there's the big question is what's going to happen? How does he live with this spell? And what do the powers of evil or good prevail? It's fantastical. It's like otherworldly. I mean, we don't go around having thoughts of three oranges generally. So there's like a surrealness to it.
That sounds great. We look forward to it.
Yeah. You can go and read the synopsis if you want, but it's one of those things that I would just encourage people to come in and just be ready for an otherworldly experience.
Great. Thank you so much, David Devan.
It's a pleasure being with you.